Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there appears to be a rhythm, a cycle to everything, even, or especially, trends in the things that are supposed to scare us. Good example is the suddenly current trend, at least in news coverage, about something called natalism, otherwise known as humans have to have more babies fast. Perhaps the most famous advocate and practitioner of this theory is a man recently reported to have had at least four wives and at least, well, at last count, at least 14 children. Yes, Elon Musk. But he's far from the only one. Natalists are popping up on the news like poppies in the California desert. You know, like they pop. In the United States, births per woman are running under the replacement rate, we are told. And our population is getting older. And it's not just us. All over the world, the birth rate is going down. It's like we don't have nearly enough Elons. Anyone above the age of puberty, though, probably remembers us being told that the population of humans is quickly outpacing the ability of the planet's resources to support us. After all, never in human history have there been this many of us, some 8 billion at last count. Discussions of natalism often bring up the rising cost of having and raising kids, but that's just the tip of the birthberg. In olden times, and in poorer countries right now, kids are an economic benefit. As young as 7 or 8, they're out helping on the farm, doing work that in richer countries, we have to pay immigrants to do. In the modern U.S., kids remain stubbornly part of the family circle well into their 20s. They're not planting or harvesting, they're playing video games. Just like Elon, the record high number of us on the planet has, to be kind, coincided with record levels of pollution, damage to natural cycles, little things like climate change. Maybe in the wacky ways nature works, we're unconsciously backing off of the kid assembly line before we totally wreck the place. Maybe, as a result, you know, there won't be as many young workers to support an increasingly aging population, like the natalists warn us. Maybe our fate is to spend our golden years being supported and cared for, not by our heirs, but by our machines. Hello, welcome to the show.
When streams are ripe and swelled with rain, may she will stay, resting in my arms again. June, she'll change her tune. In restless walks she'll prowl the night. July she will fly and give no warning to her flight. August, die she must. The autumn winds blow chilly and cold. September, I'll remember. A love once new has now grown old.
From New Orleans, this is Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. Thank you, Artie, for the great song.
I think I'm starting to hate it, except I know I love it.
Oh, no.
It's been chased away somehow. Mm. Whatever was fertile about the song, which I was connected with about an hour and a half ago,
sure,
has ground down. Something like starting from the beginning feels like the right thing to do because,
well,
it is. It seems to me to be tremendously respected.
Mm-hmm.
What does the singer feel like singing it at? Mm. Where, no, since he knows his own chops,
sure,
will he be pacing most naturally?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is for you to say, I see the kind of record that would lead to, but let me try something, and then I'll take direction. But first,
no,
I would think comes this fabulous thing called what comes natural,
mm-hmm,
which is really to be respected.
Yeah, we just don't have time for it. And now, a new feature on the program, the new word of the week. This is from the British Tech Journal, a Register. Intel's new CEO, Lip-Bu Tan, no, that's not the word, is starting another round of layoffs as the company tries to slim down. And what he said in his conference call with investors was this, quote, we need to get our balance sheet healthy and start the process of delaborating this year, unquote. Yeah, it means firing, but it's delaborating. The new word of the week. And speaking as we were of a certain Mr. Musk.
Looks like Musk love.
Well, Elon says supply chain disruption in China held up delivery of a key component for Tesla's Optimus robot. Authorities reportedly demanded an export license and guarantees about military applications. Not another delay, not another promise delayed, really. You know that in an earnings call in the past few days, revenues slumped 20% and net income plunged 70% for Tesla. And during that earnings call, Musk talked of difficulties in obtaining rare earth magnets used in robot motors. Quote, we're working through that with China. Hopefully we'll get a license to use rare earth magnets. China wants assurances these are not used for military purposes, which obviously they're not. They're just going into a humanoid robot. There's not like an existing supply chain for the motors, gearboxes, electronics, actuators, really anything in the Optimus apart from the Tesla AI computer, which is the same as the one in the car. So when you have a new complex manufactured product, it will move as fast as the slowest and least lucky component in the entire thing. Unquote. He had previously predicted that a Tesla would be able to make a driverless trip from LA to New York. Hasn't happened yet. No. He said on the call, anyone who tells you they can predict with precision the production ramp of the truly new product doesn't know what they're talking about, unquote. Musk says thousands of the new Tesla robot would be produced, quote, by the end of this year, unquote. So I guess he knows what, I guess he doesn't. Limited production of the Optimus robot, around 5,000. We'll see them used in Tesla factories. Another run is scheduled for next year. Those may be sold to paying customers. But he waxed optimistic. Again, quote, I feel confident in getting to 1 million units per year in less than 5 years. So by 2030, I feel confident in predicting 1 million Optimus units per year. It might be 2029. Unquote. Yes, he knows what he... No, he doesn't. News of Musk love. And in related nonsense,
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip hip hooray.
What the hey? You could have used that. Say, say. WhatsApp says its new AI feature embedded in the messaging service is entirely optional, despite the fact it can't be removed from the app. This is from the BBC. The Meta AI logo opens a chatbot designed to answer your questions. It has drawn attention and frustration from users who can't remove it. from the app. It follows Microsoft's recall feature. That was an always-on tool before the firm faced a backlash and decided to allow people to disable it. Quote, we think giving people these options is a good thing, and we're always listening to feedback from our users, unquote, WhatsApp. There's a long message from Meta before you ask its bot anything, explaining what Meta AI is, stating it's optional. On its website, WhatsApp says Meta AI can answer your questions, teach you something, or help come up with new ideas. So far in Europe, people aren't very pleased. Users on X, Blue Sky, and Reddit outline their frustrations. A Guardian columnist was among those venting their anger on not being able to turn it off. An advisor on AI and privacy, Dr. Chris Shrishak, was also highly critical, accusing Meta of, quote, exploiting the existing market and, quote, using people as test subjects for AI, unquote. He continued, its AI models are a privacy violation by design. Meta, through web scraping, has used personal data of people and pirated books in training them. Now, the legality of their approach has been challenged in courts. Meta is looking for other sources to collect data from people. This feature could be one such source, unquote. The good doctor. An investigation by The Atlantic revealed that Meta may have accessed millions of pirated books and research papers through a site called LibGen, Library Genesis, in order to train its AI called Llama. That's so cute. Another author groups across the UK and around the world are campaigning to encourage governments to intervene. Meta is currently defending a court case brought by multiple authors over the use of their work. The Information Commissioner's Office of Britain told the BBC it would continue to monitor the adoption of Meta AI's technology and the use of personal data within WhatsApp. Quote, personal information fuels much of AI innovation, so people need to trust that organizations are using their information responsibly, unquote, them. And actors, you've heard of them, are earning good money by licensing their likenesses to AI companies. Some are now regretting it. This from a website called Petapixel. A growing number of performers have been shocked, to discover their likeness being used in ways they find embarrassing, damaging, or even harmful. In many cases, actors who didn't fully grasp the long-term implications are now speaking out of licensing their image to AI. A new report by Agence France-Presse highlights the rising concerns among those who fear they may have lost control of their likeness. British actor and model Conor Yates was sleeping on a friend's sofa when he signed a 3-year deal with AI video firm Synthesia for about $5,000. At the time, it felt like a lifeline. But Yates was later stunned to find his face being used in videos promoting Ibrahim Traoré, the president of Burkina Faso, who came to power in a coup a couple of years ago. Synthesia's head of corporate affairs acknowledges the lapse. Quote, 3 years ago, a few videos slipped our content moderation involving exaggerated claims or propaganda. Unquote. Yates is far from alone. South Korean actor Simon Lee also licensed his image to an AI marketing company, only to later see his digital double in bizarre and misleading videos online. His likeness appeared as a doctor promoting questionable health remedies on TikTok and Instagram, such as lemon balm tea for weight loss or ice baths for acne. Quote, if it was a nice advertisement, it would have been fine to me, but obviously it's such a scam, unquote, Lee. His contract prevented him from having the content removed. These cases highlight the murky consequences of a growing trend, actors selling the rights to their face and voice to AI firms, often for a quick paycheck, only to lose control of how their image is used. AI avatars increasingly used in ads because they're cheap and faster than filming real people. Actors typically spend a few hours in front of a green screen and a teleprompter performing a range of emotions so the AI can later generate videos in different languages and tones. To create these videos, Synthesia's customers simply choose a face, select a language, and tone, serious or playful, for example, and insert a script. The process is quick and affordable. The basic version is free. That's more than affordable. The pro version costs a few hundred dollars. Licensing contracts typically pay a few thousand. Many are packed with legal jargon and broad usage rights. A lawyer specializing in business contracts warns that many of these licensing agreements include broad, perpetual, and irrevocable terms. Contracts often give companies unrestricted global rights with no way for actors to withdraw them. Thank goodness I never got involved in any of that. Till now.
Smithers, release the hounds.
Wait a minute, who are you?
I'm a real actor doing real acting.
Well, let me hear.
Excellent.
Great. All right, thank you. And now, a special Pope's Funeral Weekend edition of News of the Godly. The authors of a book published this week said the Vatican knew about sexual abuse allegations against the French charity icon Abbé Pierre as early as the 1950s. That's early. The Catholic cleric who founded the Emmaus charity, now present in over 40 countries, maybe yours, was widely praised for his work for the poverty-stricken and homeless when he died in 2007, aged 94. But in recent months, more than 30 people have alleged he committed sexual abuse against them, some when they were children, between 1950 and 2000, shattering his saintly image. Prosecutors in February said no criminal investigation could be opened because of the old statute of limitations. Our old friend. Two journalists say in their book, Abbé Pierre, The Making of a Saint, alleging the Vatican knew about some of the accusations for decades. Quote, as early as autumn 1955, not only did top French clergy know about the dark side and danger in Abbé Pierre, but so did the Holy See, they wrote. Guess it didn't see. In their book, they report the Vatican requested the Bishop of Versailles launch a judicial procedure. None was begun. The journalists said they gained access to declassified Vatican archives that showed a priest had written to the Holy See in October 1955 to say Abbé Pierre had done, quote, immoral things while visiting the United States. Well, who doesn't? The archives also included the minutes of a 1957 meeting about Abbé Pierre, born Henri Grouet.
Ah, the French.
Sometime earlier, of course. The 10-page document noted that two U.S. and Canadian cardinals had alerted the Vatican in 1955 and detailed allegations against the French religious figure from 55 to 57. According to journalists, the Vatican asked its ambassador to France at the time to keep an eye on Abbé Pierre, suspecting him of having ties to communism, said the archives. The archives were consulted after the scandal first broke last year. They show French religious leaders remained quiet about what they termed Abbé Pierre's, quote, problematic, unquote, behavior. The late Pope Francis said last September the Vatican had known about the allegations against the French charity figure at least since his death in 2007. The Conference of Bishops in France at the time asked the Vatican to examine his archives to see what was known before then. No follow-up so far. And a daughter of France's Prime Minister François Bayrou Wednesday became the latest person to accuse the clergy running a school in the Pyrenees of systematic abuse, including while her father was a local official, saying a priest beat her during summer camp when she was 14, according to Agence France-Presse. Yes, I know. Bayrou's eldest daughter, Hélène Perron, who is now 53 and uses her mother's name, said her father did not know about the incident. Multiple accusations of sexual and physical abuse at the Notre-Dame de Betharau boarding school have cast a shadow on Beirut's premiership, the latest in decades of such complaints against members of Catholic institutions worldwide. What do you mean? Several of his children attended the Catholic school. His wife taught religious studies there. Beru has been accused of knowing about some of the accusations as early as the 1990s when he was education minister and was also a local official. He denies those claims. Parlon, a former pupil at that school, said the priest beat her in front of her peers during summer camp in the early 1980s. Quote, one night when we were unpacking our sleeping bags, Father Latigue suddenly grabbed me by the hair, dragged me across the floor for several meters, then punched and kicked me all over, especially in the stomach. Unquote her, quoted in Paris Match magazine. Continuing her quote, I wet myself and stayed like that all night, damp and rolled up in a ball in my sleeping bag. Unquote. The next day, she said she took part in a hike with the rest of the group, bruised all over. She was determined to show the priest who had accused her of being, quote, rude like your father, unquote, that she was not his victim. Quote, Beth Haram was organized like a sect or totalitarian regime, exercising psychological pressure on pupils and teachers, so they stayed silent. She said, I kept quiet about it for 30 years. She added, my father does not know I am a victim. Unquote. Well, he does now. News of the godly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, something I'm loath to do on a regular basis, but I just feel constrained to do it today, sharing some good news. A study published by researchers at the University at Albany has presented the first documented evidence that Adirondack surface waters have made a near full recovery from metal pollution since the enactment of the Clean Air Act. This is Albany in upstate New York. Hello, WAMC. Originally passed in 1963 and amended in subsequent decades, the Clean Air Act was one of the first major pieces of environmental legislation in the U.S., intended to reduce and control air pollution nationwide. The Adirondack Park was a prime target for the legislation. They had decades of acid rain damage impacting the region's lakes, forests, and fish populations. By analyzing historical data and newly collected sediment samples, the University of Albany study found a greater than 90% reduction in metal contamination across four ponds in the Adirondacks over the last five decades. Findings were published in Environmental Pollution. And now, to be fair, some bad news.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
A team of biologists working at the Naturalis Biodiversity Center, a research museum in the Netherlands, has found evidence of caddisfly larvae using microplastics to build their casings. And this evidence goes as far back as the 1970s, when those flies were good. In their study report in the journal Science of the Total Environment, the group discovered microplastics in larvae casings held at the museum. The caddisfly is a moth-like insect found in most countries around the world. The insect makes its home near lakes and streams, where it deposits its eggs in huge masses of jelly. Sounds good so far, right? The larvae hatch a few days later and soon thereafter begin using nearby material to encase their bodies to protect against predators. Well, and they're not so dumb. Yep. In this new study, the researchers in the Netherlands found that starting more than 50 years ago, the larvae began including microplastics in their casings. The work began after one of the team members noticed something colorful in one of the larvae casings held at the museum. A close look showed it to be a particle of microplastic. That led the team to take a closer look at the 549 casings in their collection. I've only got 420. That collection has been growing in numbers over several decades. In so doing, they found plastic in many of them. One example, the team found one casing that had multiple particles of blue microplastic, That's my favorite kind. It was dated to 1986, another with yellow plastic, dated to 1971. Further study of such casings also showed there was evidence of plastic additives. Your lead, your titanium, your zinc. Researchers suggest microplastics have been contaminating the environment for at least the last half century. And look, we're fine. And that helps to explain how so much has been found globally. Microplastics, that is. They also suggest the possibility of other species being impacted for just as long. They conclude by noting that the plastics used in the casings were more visible than natural material used to build casings, and also more buoyant. Those factors could potentially put the larvae at greater risk of being found and eaten by birds and fish. And the good news is that can't happen to us. News of microplastics.
This lovely day will lengthen into evening. We'll say goodbye to all we ever had. Alone, where we have walked together, I'll remember April and be glad. Be content, you love me once in April. Your lips were warm, and love and spring were new. But I'm not afraid of autumn and her sorrow. I'll remember April and you. The fire will dwindle into glowing ashes. For flames and love lived such a little while. I won't forget, but I won't be lonely. I'll remember April.
Direct from Vatican City, like the New York City of religion, this is your most spiritual president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Soap. Clean never smelled so Trumpy. As a person who got divorced on an occasion or two, I was glad to know the recent Pope, and I appreciated his evident love for all humanity and for me personally. I just barely met him, but I could tell he was a great guy. And I think if he had had the time, he would have been great at golf. Speaking of greatness, I'm very proud of my Secretary of Defense, the great Pete Hegseth, who's been under constant and stupid attack by the left-wing lunatics and the fake media, and by even some of his own Marxist colleagues. I knew from the first moment I saw Pete on Fox and Friends that he was a man of courage and smarts, as well as a strong chin and great hair. A man's man. Maybe even a man's man. I knew he would fit in well in any cabinet position, particularly one involving guns and ammo. Defense seemed the obvious choice, and I've never been afraid of the obvious. A big surprise. He's getting attacked by members of his own staff, clearly part of the deep state voters elected me to fight against. With his relentless good looks and his willingness to shout back at every critic, Pete is to me the perfect representative of what I've pledged to defend. You might call it the shallow state. If he disagrees with the so-called experts about whether his chats contain so-called classified information, my money's on Pete. He never seemed like a classified guy to me in the first place. Long after what I call the Hegseth haters move on to the next target, Pete will still be on the job, cleaning up the Pentagon, even if it involves what some are calling chaos. As my friend Elon says, there's nothing neat and orderly about waste, fraud, and the other thing. Next time I see Pete, I'm going to tell him two things. Keep on doing a great job, and who does your hair? Tomorrow, how come I didn't get to speak at the Pope's funeral? Talk to you then.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Fruit Juice. More juicy, less fruity. So long.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the side effects of the week.
Do not take if allergic to Farxiga. Symptoms of a serious allergic reaction include rash, swelling, difficulty breathing, or swallowing. Stop taking and seek medical help right away. Tell your doctor right away if you have red color in urine or pain while you urinate or a genital area infection, since a rare but serious genital infection may be life-threatening. Do not take Farxiga if you have severe kidney problems or are on dialysis. Other serious side effects include dehydration, genital yeast and bacterial infections in women and men, urinary tract infections, low blood sugar, and sudden kidney problems. Stop taking Farxiga and call your doctor right away if you have symptoms of ketoacidosis, which is serious and may lead to death.
Death? Is that serious? Uh-oh, look out now. It's a crypto winter. Coinbase-supported Instagram copycat Zora has frustrated users with a number of controversial decisions that appear to completely go against its previous stances on several of its offerings. This is from a website that follows crypto called Protos. With little warning, Zora terminated years of its support for NFTs. Why, I got a bunch for creators in favor of meme coins. Yeah, it's scam-like. Second, as a way to underhandedly hand out money to disgruntled users, it announced an airdrop. However, it withheld all governance rights and granted itself a 45% allocation for team and strategic contributors, plus 25% of the project-controlled treasury and liquidity pools. It all sounds so good. Crypto sleuth Zach XBT summed up the feelings of many members, saying, quote, "Why does the token need to exist at all if it serves absolutely zero purpose?" He called it just embarrassing for the space. I think he means the human space. Zora pivoted to turning social media posts into tradable coins with no warning, a frustrating move particularly for artists who would use the platform to mint NFTs since 2021, but suddenly found themselves minting creator coins instead. Yeah, the NFT thing was so good. First, when a Zora user posts to the social platform, the project generates a new token with a supply of 1 billion, some of which goes to the post's creator. The creator also earns 1% of the trading fees. Zora and Base touted so-called content coins as an easy way for creators to earn money from their posts. Of course, in practice, the surprise launch disproportionately benefited early insiders. Almost like that's the game. And key opinion leader accounts like Base itself. Base is an Ethereum-based Layer 2 blockchain founded by Coinbase. They launched a content coin that initially seemed to be the first token launch by the massive project. In less than 2 hours, confused traders bid up the token to a market cap of $15 million. But wait, as the community realized it wasn't officially a Base token, it crashed 94% in 7 minutes. Woo! Talk about dizzy. And a UK street gang involved in fraud, drug dealing, and extortion is paying people to launch OneCom-style meme coins to dump on their investors to launder their illicit profits. Expert witness and drug crime specialist Gary Carroll, who revealed the meme coin laundering scheme to the British newspaper newspaper, the Daily Mail, claimed that mid-level members of one particular gang are launching meme coins and have hundreds of thousands of pounds, we call them dollars, to fund it. Neither the newspaper nor Carroll were willing to reveal the meme coin in question. It wasn't Donald Trump's, was it? No, they're trying to protect the identity of Carroll's sources. He did say the gang is not a household name. The paper conceded the coin in question bears a passing resemblance to one coin, the billion-dollar crypto pyramid scheme that spawned a worldwide manhunt. The plot is active, and the gang, which has international connections, also participates in the selling of counterfeit goods and cigarettes. Cigarettes sound so wholesome after all that, doesn't it? Carroll also suggested that launching meme coins may become more widespread among gangs looking to launder funds due to the simplicity of the launch process. Quote, in 1 or maybe 2 years' time, there will be cases in court. I'm confident about that. Adding, it may become a common method for gangs to semi-legitimize their trade. The world's largest meme coin launcher, Pump Fun, which has created a sizable following based on launching and trading meme coins with ease, is currently being sued by a law firm that says Pump Fun is a magnet for terrorist financing, drug trafficking, and other transnational crimes. The firm continues to dominate the meme coin market, while a recent report suggests it's suffering from a widespread, quote, meme coin sniper, unquote, problem. Thank goodness the current occupant of the White House has nothing to do with all of that, because it's a crypto winner.
Love has lost its way. If romance grows dim with each passing day, if you've forgotten how we met in a till April comes again. When robins return and spring has softened winter's chill, will you then recall?
The apologies of the week.
just so sorry.
Dateline Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City National Monument and Museum released a statement this week after some family members, survivors, and first responders were not able to get inside the church where the 30th anniversary remembrance ceremony was held last week. That's the remembrance of the Oklahoma City bombing by Timothy McVeigh. Ring a bell? Weather conditions caused the ceremony to be moved inside, which officials said created logistical challenges, which caused some people who were directly impacted by the bombing not to be able to go indoors. Statement said in part, quote, "We strive to ensure the remembrance ceremony provides healing and hope. Our leadership team and conscience committee, made up of family members, survivors, and first responders, will work to understand the full details of what happened, including speaking with those who are understandably upset," unquote. Officials said they are deeply sorry and would never knowingly cause pain to those who've already suffered so much, and that feedback will not be taken lightly. We'll read it. Deadmau5, or as he pronounces it, does he pronounce it Deadmau5 or Deadmau5? You'd know, wouldn't you? He returned to Coachella over the weekend, last weekend, to play the Quasar stage, but left the platform stumbling after enjoying one too many drinks. The Canadian DJ uploaded a series of Instagram posts the following morning that included an apology for his behavior and his admission that Coachella 2025 would probably be his last. Real name Joel Zimmerman was on the lineup as his alter ego Test Pilot alongside electronic music artist Joe. The pair were scheduled to play for multiple hours, always a good idea, but their performance was cut short after Joel Zimmerman, Deadmau5, was seen and heard taking shots and slurring his speech, eventually falling over behind the DJ booth and being escorted off the stage. In an Instagram caption the next morning, the producer DJ wrote that he didn't remember a thing, noted that he also didn't have a cigarette, which he had vowed to quit just a week before. "I don't remember a thing, but I don't think I had a cig, so that's good, I guess. Going back to bed. Wake me up around Thursday-ish," he said in a post alongside a picture of a water bottle. "Probably my last Coachella," he added in a comment. He also uploaded a photo of his cat, writing, quote, "Even my cat is disappointed in me," unquote. "Sorry about last night," he continued. "To be fair, I felt the first three quarters was great. Huge shout out to Zhu for introducing me to whiskey and carrying my dumb ass till the bitter end. Let me quit smoking, do some personal resetting here at home, find my spirit animal, work on some new music, and come back better," unquote. I think his spirit animal is in the spirit zoo. The Inside the NBA crew is arguably the best studio show in sports. You never know what Charles Barkley and Shaq are going to say next. That's what Sports Illustrated says, at least. On last Sunday's show, Shaquille O'Neal claimed that former NBA guard Billy Ray Bates was dead. Billy Ray Bates is, in fact, alive, which led to host Ernie Johnson making an apology to Bates and his family the next night. This all happened during a discussion about Atlanta Hawks guard Ty Jerome scoring 28 points coming off the bench in his playoff debut. Bates is number three on the list. He scored 29 points off the bench in his playoff debut way back in 1980. Charles Barkley asked an awkward question about Bates. Quote, "I wonder if he's still alive," unquote. After some silence from the crew, Ernie Johnson, the host, said, "That's not a question Barkley should be asking on live TV." Then Shaquille O'Neal chimed in by saying Bates had passed away. That's the same Shaquille O'Neal who's doing a bunch of commercials now, so you got to be able to believe him. But no, Bates is still alive. Here's Johnson's apology, quote, "In the course of our discussion, we passed on some bad information that Billy Ray Bates had passed away. While it was inadvertent, it was also inaccurate, insensitive, and inexcusable. In short, we screwed up. and we apologize to Billy Ray Bates and his family. May he rest in... No, he didn't say that. MGM Resorts International apologized for accepting nearly $5 million in wagers from illegal bookmakers and accepted a fine of $8.5 million from the Nevada Gaming Commission this week. For the most part, commissioners didn't lambaste MGM, saying it has a history of compliance, and instead blamed the problem on bad actors within the organization. As an actor, the commission voted 4-0 to accept the settlement between the MGM and the Gaming Control Board. The cases involved the MGM Grand accepting more than $4 million in wagers and nearly $1 million at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, which wasn't operated at the time by MGM, at the time the infractions took place. MGM was previously fined nearly $7.5 million by the federal government as part of a non-prosecution agreement. I bet Sam Goldwyn is proud. President Trump's pick to lead the prosecuting office in Washington, D.C. has apologized for past comments praising a Nazi sympathizer as congressional scrutiny over his nomination mounts. Ed Martin, tapped to lead the U.S. Attorney's Office for D.C., said in an exclusive interview with the Jewish magazine Forward, used to be a newspaper, I guess it's a magazine now, and published this past Thursday, that he's sorry about past flattery for Timothy Hale Cusinelli. Cusinelli was a convicted and now pardoned January 6th rioter whom the Justice Department described as, quote, an avowed white supremacist and Nazi sympathizer, unquote. Of course he was pardoned. At an event last year at Trump's Bedminster, New Jersey golf club, Martin described him, Cusinelli, as an extraordinary man and an extraordinary leader. Now, quote, I denounce everything about what that guy said, everything about the way he talked and all, as I've now seen it. Martin told the Forward. At the time, I didn't know it. Unquote. The interim U.S. attorney for D.C. acknowledged he should have known better, but said he, quote, certainly didn't know all the terrible things that he said and how he had acted. I think that's terrible, and I denounced it completely. I hate it. I hate that it happened. Unquote. Martin has emerged as one of the president's most controversial nominations to lead a prosecuting office. The role marks his first stint as a prosecutor. Hey, I could do it. He's claimed his role is to serve as one of the president's attorneys, flouting Justice Department credo to serve as the people's lawyers. Martin also failed to disclose more than 150 appearances in social media in his confirmation disclosures. He appeared on two Russian media channels more than 150 times between 2016 and 2024. Didn't detail those appearances in the paperwork used to vet nominees. But he is so sorry. And Dateline Amsterdam, the mayor of Amsterdam apologized this week for the role the Dutch capital played in the persecution of its Jewish citizens during World War II, saying the government at the time, quote, let its Jewish residents down terribly, unquote. Speaking at an event marking Israel's Holocaust Remembrance Day, Mayor Femke Halsema said that civil servants in Amsterdam played an active role in the murder of some thousands of Jewish citizens of the city. Of the estimated 80,000 Jews who lived in the city of Amsterdam at the outbreak of World War II, only 20,000 survived. Among those deported was Anne Frank and her family, except for her father, who survived. Quote, the Amsterdam government, when it came down to it, was not heroic, not determined, and not merciful. And it let its Jewish residents down terribly, Halsema said. On behalf of the city government, I offer my apologies for this, he added. He spoke at Hollandsche Schouwburg, a theater which operated as a collection point for Jews to be deported to extermination camps. She recalled how the municipality helped with the registration of Jewish citizens and the drawing up of cards showing where Jews lived. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, U.S. health insurance giant Blue Shield of California handed sensitive health information belonging to as many as 4.5 million members to Google's advertising empire, likely without those individuals' knowledge or consent. The data shared may have included medical claim dates and providers used. That raises the specter of Google targeting ads based on the fact that you booked an appointment with a certain type of doctor, like a cancer specialist or fertility clinic or psychiatrist. Other info potentially shared with Google, according to the British Tech Journal, The Register, ranged from patient names, insurance plan details, city of residency and zip code, gender, family size, and Blue Shield assigned account identifiers to financial responsibility info, search queries, and results for the Find a Doctor tool. Exactly what was shared depended on what healthcare you were receiving and whether you accessed or entered your info into Blue Shield's websites between 2021 and 2024. Blue Shield gave this info to Google via its visitor analysis tool. The web giant may have used that data to target individuals with tailored ads, according to a privacy breach notification sent this month to Blue Shield, to the 4.5 million people potentially caught up in the blunder. Blue Shield embedded into its web pages code that would send visitor data to Google Analytics. And these logs were passed on to Google Ads due to a configuration error by the insurer. Quote, like other health plans, Blue Shield previously used Google Analytics to track how members interact with its websites and which sites they visit. That's what the insurance company admitted. The outfit claims this was all to improve the services we provide to our members. The health info did not necessarily remain between the insurer and its members, however. On February 11th of this year, Blue Shield discovered that between April 21 and January 24, Google Analytics was configured in a way that allowed certain members' data to be shared with Google Ads that likely included protected health information, according to the insurance company's website. Quote, Google may have used this data to conduct focused ad campaigns back to those individual members, the note continued. We want to reassure our members that no bad actor was involved. That's a relief for AFTRA. And to our knowledge, Google has not used the information for any purpose other than these ads or shared the protected information with anyone. Unquote.
Smell the roses, smell the grass.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this mini-thon. Back next week, same time on the same radio stations and on your audio device of choice, whenever you want it. I'd enjoy your company then, if possible. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. Somebody remind me what those were. And the playlist of the music here on, as well as a lot of other stuff to watch, read, hopefully not regret, all for your delectation at harryshearer.com. And speaking of delectation or deliberation, I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change Is Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.